You know, as a journalist, I'm accustomed to that because the goal is the truth, right?
Right.
Facts, so that we can learn and make our own interpretation.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
All right, hey, welcome to Hangar X Studios, and we're live at Verticon with another fantastic guest, Amy Gallagher. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, it was so great to connect with you because you're a journalist.
I am.
And you're also on the staff and part of AirMed and Rescue, which is a phenomenal, I'm sure our audience is probably reading, and if not, you need to check it out.
Yeah, but check out airmedandrescue.com.
Airmedandrescue.com, 122 countries.
Well, I have a readership of 122 countries as a journalist covering the global industry, military and civilian aviation rescue and medical. And we, as a magazine, AMR, Airmen and Rescue, reaches about 25,000 readers globally.
Yeah, every time it comes out, that's fantastic. And tell us a little bit about your background, because you were sharing, like, from a little girl. You were actually in a safety training video on the F-16 and
right.
into what you're doing now. So give us right. a little bit of your background.
Pivotal time. So I was 10. My father was over the production of the F-16 and working with the test pilots. And he lost his first test pilot. And so he gathered a film crew and decided to put together an F-16 FOD training video. And so I played the daughter of the F-16 test pilot who was killed in a test flight. And it was a funeral procession. No words. I didn't have to speak any words. I just stepped out of the family limo and looked up at the sky saying, "Where is my daddy?" basically, or "My daddy's in heaven." So I was 10. And so I got what happens. I understood clearly what happens when we're not following a realistic production schedule as opposed to being pushed through and adhering to every single safety standard and listening to the team, listening to those in charge, I think is most important.
And I know that mishap was from somebody left a wrench where they weren't supposed to leave a wrench.
Right,
and
that was the scenario.
And there's something I haven't thought about in a while till you just said that, but I'll never forget when I was in my flight training in the T-2 Buckeye in the Navy, my intermediate jet training.
Yeah.
We had a mishap. A close friend of mine passed away. Oh, and I was doing really good until after the service at the chapel, and they did the missing man flyby, and I wasn't expecting this. I hadn't seen it before. Four airplanes combined, then one peels off to go straight up. And when I saw that, I just lost it. It was like all the emotions hit me.
Right.
And we thought it was pilot error. But what we found out was later when they recovered the aircraft, somebody had installed the throttle quadrant backwards, and which it'll still operate correctly
right.
until it doesn't. And that's what caused the mishap was a maintenance error. And, you know, that's just sometimes hard to reconcile because, you know, you're up there flying these I got to fly all the way through F-14s and F-16s. Okay. Navy had a few of those, but it was a pretty sobering moment when you realize training both for maintenance and the pilots and everything that goes into it when there's a fatality, which we all want to avoid.
Right, and then we ask questions, right? I think the questions need to happen during the training, the teaching, when we're learning. Bruce Webb offered a great session the other day. Are we learning or are we training?
No, Bruce from Airbus, right? Airbus. It was one of the presentations.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And he's right on with, are we learning? Are we learning and listening? And do we feel safe? Do we feel the environment is safe enough to ask the tough questions? You know, as a journalist, I'm accustomed to that because the goal is the truth, right?
Right.
Facts, so that we can learn and make our own interpretation. But if we're not presented with the truth, then how can we fairly reassess and know what needs to be improved to save lives?
Right. And how would you define the difference between learning and training?
Well, I'm also a certified teacher. I have certifications. I taught grades 4 through 12 and tutored nursing students at TCU. I think learning versus training is learning you're engaged, right? So every instructor, every teacher, from Black Hawk instructors to F-16, we need to hear back from the students. We need to know each one of our students personally, as in one-on-one, and engage in them. What is your passion? What is your fear? And so unless you have those individual one-on-one conversations, you're just speaking to one class of people as a whole versus the individual personalities that make up those two people in the cockpit, essentially. And managing communications in the cockpit is a part of that. How do you communicate? Do you receive the right information at the right time? So it's so dynamic, and it's not the bright and shiny thing. It's not sexy. You know, training is not sexy. It's not a profit center. It's not that.
The safety program feels like extra work sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And teaching too. It can be draining. Instructing can be draining. It definitely has to be a passion to impart that knowledge, and making sure we have well-qualified instructors. Of course, there's a pilot shortage and an instructor shortage too. So we're in a push to hurry up and train pilots, you know, recruit pilots. And that's another topic altogether that's affecting the overall industry. So it's great to see all of these wonderful, you know, new aircraft and the avionics and the engines and the technology. But unless the teams must be working with the technology in the training to experience that transformation.
Yeah.
So it's change does happen when you're learning, but it needs to be a transformation as a team.
What's the transformation that needs to happen?
The honesty, the transparency, I guess getting real with the deal about why pilots are dying, why Black Hawks are colliding, why are there collisions? And it's usually a host or a matrix of multiple variables, right? But when you start checking your checklist, you know, was the right technology installed? Did the Black Hawk have aircraft proximity warning device installed?
Did the crew know how to use what was installed?
Exactly.
Or were they using it properly?
Or just, is it even installed in the first place? So I understand the need to conduct national security missions. I read recently about a 1996 Black Hawk collision in Australia. The Australian military, they lost 18 crew members. They decided as a country, both the military and the federal government decided together that they would install the aircraft proximity warning devices in 1996. So I'm an American. I love aviation. I love flying. It's in my family. My father was over the Apache production as well.
Oh, wow.
My son is a Black Hawk pilot, and I've been an internationally published journalist covering military and civilian aviation for 18 years. So I read a quote from one of the NTSB investigators about the Potomac recently, and she said, "I'm very angry, but I'm also very sad about why this is happening." So, you know, it doesn't make sense when it happens, when we have the greatest technology, the greatest minds, we have the money, we have the funding. So why does it happen? And I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but, you know, I've been in this industry long enough, if you count the age of 10, a few years, few decades now. So you start to see what really needs to happen.
So if you've researched and dug into this, what are some maybe best practices you're seeing both in the military and the civilian side? Because there's different stakeholders, right? We have student pilots
right
in both areas. We have the people that are now maybe moving toward their commercial, right? Or you have
right.
people that are now professional pilots. You also have the departments. You have the instructors, right? There's different stakeholders in this whole safety ecosystem.
It's a matrix.
There's the mindset of the, you know, each organization and the management.
Yes.
So that said, what are some of the maybe best practices that we as an industry we should be paying attention to? Like, what do you see that's working?
Well, I like the term proficiency culture.
Yeah, you said that before. I do like that.
It raises the bar a bit, and it awakens us to the fact that the word safety is underappreciated and overused.
It can become a bit of a buzzword.
Right.
So right. When you say proficiency, yes. What kind of proficiency would that be?
That each person is held accountable to his or her own proficiency levels. And not only that, I think each pilot, each crew member, you know, aspires to be the best, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't be in aviation. It's very competitive. And yeah, it has some dangers to it. But are they also in a place, in an environment where they can speak what's really going on with them, honestly? There was another session I attended, Susan Gittings' clinical. So the medical side of flying, is the pilot suffering from PTSD, active duty Black Hawk? And they're still flying, but they can't say anything, right? Because the DOD might, frown upon that. So that's what I'd like to see changed. Because if you're not in a safe learning environment, and every workplace should be a learning environment.
Right. And learning organizations have a huge advantage. I mean, that's the entire
right.
mindset of Marine Corps leadership is to create a learning environment.
Right.
Yep.
Where we're all asking why and why not. As a journalist, every journalist has to answer the five W's, who, what, where, when, and why. But I add the five senses to that because that's where you get the personal connection. Well, what did you see? What did it feel like? What did it smell like? I mean, I taught this, to fourth graders. Pretend to like you're a baseball. Well, what does a baseball smell like, Mrs. Gallagher? What does it taste like? Well, when it hits the grass, it tastes like grass. I mean, we have to get deeper.
I was going
to
say dirt and leather. But, here's an interesting anecdote, though, for you. Because, the military culture, when we'd show up for a brief, mm-hmm. we'd go around and I would say, engine fire on flight, and you'd have to recite the bold face in front of everybody. Everybody got a different emergency procedure, so we were constantly holding each other accountable. And I recently did a transition to the SR-22, okay. right? So yeah. I read the entire flight manual, and I created flashcards for every procedure and emergency procedure and memorized them before my first flight with my instructor, and I had my cards with me. And
so you're a professional student.
And he said, nobody's ever done this. So my 20-hour transition worked out to be 6. But I'm just thinking, I do see, I don't want to throw any shade, but I do see sometimes a culture in the civilian world, like even flying Cessnas. I bet most of the student pilots haven't taken personal responsibility of really understanding like what we have in the military, the NATOPS,
right?
The owner's manual, the POH, the emergency procedures, and commit to proficiency.
Right.
Because you don't know when that engine's going to quit or an alternator's going to fail or there's fire or smoke. And then now lives are at risk, both in your plane and on the ground. And
right.
I think it's also making it cool to actually have that level of proficiency.
I think the word cool would go a long way in aviation. Because we are competitive. We compete with each other, even at this show at Verticon, right?
Yep.
In different ways. So I think, too, we need more mentors in aviation.
And I'd like to see the CFIs also, raise the standard of excellence.
Yes.
Right? They should be doing that, too.
Right. The sky was never the limit, right?
If the students knew they were going to get quizzed, or each flight after they're proficient with basic flying, there was going to be some kind of emergency procedure thrown at them.
Right.
Right? They're, guess what?
You have to be prepared.
You're going to modify people's attitudes and behavior and how they show up. Yeah.
And you want to be that person who is ready no matter what.
Yeah.
Right? And even asking a question, well, what if this happened instead, real quickly?
Yeah. I love the what ifs. Not always in my own life. Well, what if? But Amy, you're doing such great work. And I'd love to keep the conversation going. And, I'd love to have you back on where we can do kind of a full format interview.
Absolutely.
After Verticon. So just as we wrap up, just any final thoughts you'd like to leave with everybody listening?
Well, after interviewing pilots and researchers and surgeons and flight crews from Hurricane Harvey to the amazing work they did there, the National Guard, my sources are precious to me. And I know not every journalist may say that, but I am privileged to be a journalist and be able to brag about their work using their words. So a big shout out to every person I've ever interviewed, and there's probably been over 1,000
wow.
in my career. And read. I encourage reading, listening, and learning, and then asking questions, even if you feel like you're going to get, I don't know, in trouble or frowned upon or dismissed. Be that person, you know, that speaks.
But that also should be a red flag maybe about your culture, too. If I'm afraid to speak up to my chief pilot or to a coworker or another pilot, why is that?
Right.
That might be a good question to ask yourself is, maybe this isn't the organization I'd be in, or can I positively impact this organization to make it a little more safe to be talking about issues that could, you know, lives could depend on it.
And I think that's where and when true leaders step up.
Yep, 100%. Well, Amy, thank you for the work you're doing and for coming over. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for your service, too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Amy.